Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. I am your host. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and on social media, especially Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And of course, please subscribe to Food for Thought at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're enjoying this free podcast called Food for Thought, I ask that you share it with others and leave ratings and reviews. Word of mouth is the best way to increase its listenership, and supporting it is the best way to keep it going. Please go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau to support this podcast, this work, especially if you subscribe already or if you get anything out of this podcast at all. Please become a supporter. joyfulvegan.com/donate or patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. Today's topic is vegan in Vietnam. Before we get started, hi everyone, I have a few awesome announcements. Registration for the Compassion in Action 2018 conference is closing, so grab your spot before it's too late. Go to compassioninactionconference.com. And as soon as you register, you'll get our schedule and lots of goodies all about the weekend that we're going to spend together. This year, for the first time, we're also providing food. We've got breakfast and lunch for everyone on Saturday. We've got a snack on Sunday thanks to Planted Table. Planted Table is for anyone who wants heart-healthy, plant-based meals, but doesn't have the desire or the time to cook themselves. It's like having your own personal chef, and they're zero waste. They are vegan, zero waste, serving the San Francisco Bay Area. Meals are delivered straight to your door, which is pretty amazing. So if you want to enjoy Planted Table's food and my content and the content and genius of our speakers, then join us at Compassion in Action Conference 2018. And I have one more very exciting piece of news. Are you ready? Because the demand for CPG vegan trips is so high, we've added more trips for 2019. So you can go to CPG Trips or cpgvegantrips.com and you can check out. Are you ready? We've got Rwanda, which I know a lot of you know about, but we have two more spots that we opened up for the July trip. So if you're interested, it still gives you almost a year to save, to get everything you need. Of course, we guide you through everything. The whole point is that we are there to take care of everything for you so you don't have to worry about a thing. So check that out. The itinerary is kind of amazing. We will be seeing the mountain gorillas. We'll be seeing chimpanzees. We'll be seeing golden monkeys. We'll be seeing elephants and rhinos and giraffes and lions all in their natural habitat. So it's a pretty special, really special trip. So check it out. Once in a lifetime. That's at cpgvegantrips.com. Also, we have added Vietnam and Thailand, both of which are curated, meaning you get to go, I stay home, and my awesome, awesome partners and friends will be hosting the trip. But this means that you can experience the CPG trips, which are, again, once in a lifetime, five star, so life altering. Ask anybody who's been on our trips. And I get to run these, but the only way I can do more is if I don't go on every one. I can't go on every one. So CPG Vegan Vietnam and CPG Vegan Thailand in 2019, they're both curated, we're calling them, which means you go, I stay home. And then we're also offering Alsace, France again. We sold out so quickly of the Alsace, France 2018 Christmas trip. And it is really quite a winter wonderland. We are also going to an animal sanctuary there. I'm going to keep that under wraps for now. But we're going to be experiencing Paris and the Alsace region, which is quite magical, Strasbourg. And we're going to be going into Germany as well. But it's going to be pretty magical. So if you want another magical holiday with us, that would be December 2019. So you've got four trips to go and look at right now at cpgvegantrips.com. Rwanda, Vietnam, Thailand, and France, Alsace, France. So don't hesitate. That means you don't have to wait until 2020 because we don't have 2020 trips planned yet. We have to make sure you're interested in 2019 trips. So go look at the testimonials as well. You'll see some wonderful videos from our previous travelers, especially those who have been on our Vietnam trip, which I'm going to talk about today. And yeah, I'm really excited about that. And thank you also to everyone who is supporting this podcast. You can tell that I'm not able to do them weekly like I used to, and that's because of support. I can only do what I'm able to do. So if you want this podcast and you want this podcast to be more regular, I do need your support. So go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau and become a supporter. Now, Vietnam. I'm not going to lie. I'm surprised. Having watched our Thailand trip fill up immediately, I was surprised. We were all surprised that our Vietnam 2018 trip didn't oversell. And we might not be able to host that Vietnam 2019 trip that I mentioned because people just don't seem to have the enthusiasm, the interest in Vietnam as they do in, say, a place like Thailand. And I have to be honest, especially now that I've been to a number of regions in both countries, I'm surprised. Now, everybody's different, and different places and different countries appeal to different people. I get that. And granted, Thailand is the number one tourist destination for Americans, specifically Americans. And I think that's why a lot of people go. It's popular. It's tropical. It caters to tourists. Yes, it's also beautiful, high value for low cost. And for our purposes, it's vegan friendly. And not that it's a contest, because it's not. And not that I have to pick a favorite, but I have to say, having been to both countries now, I would go back to Vietnam in a heartbeat. True, I'm not going on our next trip to Vietnam, the CPG curated one that I hope you'll go on. But that's only because the only way for me to offer more trips to the public is to not go on every single one. And plus, it's in 2019 when we're going to be going. I'm having, you know, two back-to-back trips to Rwanda, and we've got the Alsace trip. But we do have plans to offer more trips to Vietnam, other parts of Vietnam, including ones that I will be on, but that's far off in the future. And I am really looking forward to going back to Vietnam. And I'm excited to share our adventure with you, not simply because I want you to come on our next trip. Of course I do, but because I really have an affection for this country that I didn't expect to have and that I'd like to convey to you. Now, I'm not going to bore you in this episode. This is not going to be a blow by blow of our itinerary. So you can go to CPG Vegan Trips for that. And you can go to joyfulvegan.com and look at the many blog posts, and you'll see some shared content, things I'm going to talk about today on the podcast. But really, what this is about is what my experience of Vietnam was from the perspective of, you know, kind of the main takeaways of what we all care about: food, animal protection, environmentalism. And I will be talking about some zero waste and plastic use. I'm not going to focus on that, but we make a point at the CPG trips to be as zero waste as possible. And some countries are harder than others, but I'll tell you how we do our best to accomplish that. And then, of course, I'm going to share some thoughts about the culture and the architecture and the history and why this country was so compelling. Now, let's start with the food. Here is a dirty little secret I don't mind sharing. I was not a huge fan of Vietnamese food until I went to Vietnam. And this is one of the reasons I love traveling, because I love being wrong. I love being wrong about things, because when I'm wrong about a belief I hold, it's usually because my thoughts and experience have been challenged or expanded and certainly improved. Now, of course, we've been to Vietnamese restaurants. I've had Vietnamese food. There is a very well-known vegan restaurant here in Oakland called Golden Lotus. There was a sister restaurant in San Francisco called Golden Era. And both of these are part of the whole Supreme Master Loving Hut cult. And it was the first vegan restaurant David and I went to when we moved to the San Francisco Bay Area 20 years ago. Golden Lotus was. But it also has a lot of other types of cuisines on the menu. I mean, most of it's Southeast Asian, but I'm reluctant to call it an authentic Vietnamese restaurant, just because there's just kind of other things going on. However, it's a Vietnamese restaurant. I really do love their food. But the point is, interestingly, and again, I'm making a blanket statement, but prior to going to Thailand, I would have said I really liked Thai food. And of course I do. It's delicious. Thai curries are fabulous. Coconut milk is the bomb. And who doesn't love a fresh spring roll or a fried one? But interestingly, eating there every day for 2 weeks and eating every meal, mostly Thai food. I mean, we do, our breakfast foods tend to be combined with Western foods as well, just because we want to have a vast array for our travelers. But, you know, when we go to the countries we're traveling to, we really want to enjoy the cuisine that we're in, that, you know, that's, that is the focus of that country. And after 2 weeks of Thai food, I really found it to lack nuance, to lack subtlety, to lack variety. And not that I have to pick, but it turns out that I like Vietnamese cuisine so much better. And now being back home, I've been making a lot of Vietnamese dishes. And when David and I go out to eat, when we're in the mood for Southeast Asian cuisine, although I will admit we do go to a Burmese restaurant here that we love a lot, it's not Thai that we go to like we used to default to. It's Vietnamese. And we're very lucky because we have a huge number to choose from in the Bay Area here and that I pretty much avoided all these years. Sometimes I'm a little surprised when people ask with incredulity how we eat vegan in Vietnam and Thailand, because these are tropical countries with lots of vegetables and grains. And because, of course, Buddhism also contributes a lot of vegetarian dishes in both countries. But I get it. It's not crazy to think it's difficult because fish sauce and shrimp paste and seafood and pork and chicken and beef do have a prominent place on menus in both Vietnam and Thailand. And though tofu is a staple throughout the cuisine, and you find vegan meats made from gluten because their origins are in Buddhism, and dairy is virtually absent, those aren't issues. But, you know, I get it. Like, you know, like so many countries, there's a lot of meat, especially those catering to tourists. So it's certainly, you know, easy to eat vegan. We never starve when we are traveling. We never starve. And of course, on the CPG trips, you will definitely not starve because we feed you constantly. But one thing that became very clear to me very quickly is how fresh and clean the cuisine is. There's the spicy factor too that adds to kind of this freshness. But there's just so much flavor in Vietnamese cuisine. There's a huge reliance upon dried herbs and spices and fresh herbs and spices. Vegetables tend to be eaten really fresh if they're cooked. They're usually boiled or blanched, or they're only stir-fried. One thing I definitely notice, especially in contrast to Thai cuisine, again, not that I, poor Thai cuisine, not trying to throw it under the bus. It's just the most obvious cuisine to compare Vietnamese cuisine to as a Southeast Asian country. And since we had just been there. But one thing I definitely noticed in Vietnamese cuisine versus Thai cuisine is how little oil seems to be used. It's not absent, but I find it to be much more prevalent in Thai cuisine versus Vietnamese cuisine. Now, I will tell you that one aspect of Vietnamese cuisine that I had to be very aware of is, let's just say, the first Vietnamese phrase I learned when I was there was no cilantro. Because cilantro. I know there are fellow cilantro haters out there. And yes, that was the first Vietnamese phrase I learned because, of course, cilantro is in a lot of dishes. Of course, it adds to the freshness, a lot of fresh herbs, a lot of fresh cilantro, but not for me. There is also a lot of philosophical significance behind a lot of the components of various dishes and meals in Vietnamese cuisine, and I'm not going to really get into that here because I don't really know a lot about it, but it also just adds to what's really special about the cuisine. There's a lot of attention paid to the balance of color and flavor and heat and spices, and there's a lot of emphasis on presentation, holy cannoli, which is not Vietnamese. I will talk about that when I get to our experience enjoying what was called, or what is called, the royal cuisine of Hue. And it was, I could not believe the presentation. I could just couldn't believe that things could be carved, vegetables could be carved like this. It was incredible. There are obviously regional differences between the north, which tends to be spicier, versus the south, which tends to be sweeter. And there's differences between ingredients and dishes in the rural countryside versus the more urban cities. And we found that for sure. Our trip was concentrated in the rural north and central parts of the country. even though after the CPG portion of the trip, the four of us, Bridie and Seb and David and I, went down to Saigon, to Ho Chi Minh City. So we were in the south as well. So we got a good idea of the range of cuisines in the north, the central part, and the south. Soups and broths are common everywhere, which is one of the things I fell in love with. And one of the things I also discovered, I guess, kind of reluctantly, an appreciation for noodles more than I had before. I'm typically a fan of kind of smaller, more delicate noodles like cellophane noodles or vermicelli noodles. But because of my newfound love for Vietnamese cuisine, I'm coming over to other noodles like flat noodles, which I typically avoided, but David loves more than I thought I would. So I'm just being open. Again, that's one of the reasons you travel. Is because this is what happens. You experience things you would not have experienced otherwise. You try things you'd never tried before. You expand. And it's a beautiful thing. Expand in more ways than one, because we do eat a lot. Now, what are some of the typical dishes we enjoyed in Vietnam, and are they typically vegan? Now, this is going to help you for just Vietnamese cuisine just in general when you are out and about near you, wherever you live. Hopefully you can find a Vietnamese restaurant, and it's going to help you if you go to Vietnam on your own. And of course, this can apply if you come to one of our CPG trips. So those of you who already know pho, P-H-O, it's a delicious, delicious, delicious noodle soup whose broth is out of this world and which I now crave all the time. Now, I will say this, pho is not typically vegan. Traditionally, it is not vegan. It is very meat heavy. And it's one of the reasons I never really tried pho, because even though you can find vegan pho or vegetarian pho, because it's really just the broth that would be the issue. Well, sometimes there could be egg. Well, and meat, obviously. But I mean, the point is, you can find vegetarian or vegan pho in Vietnamese restaurants, traditional Vietnamese restaurants, but not as much as you can find, obviously, the meat-based pho. So I never really had pho because because I'm also not a noodle fan and because I wasn't a big Vietnamese cuisine fan, so you get the idea. However, being in Vietnam, I was like, yeah, you got to try some pho. So the first time I had it was at a restaurant in Hanoi, and it was so good. It's typically served as a breakfast soup. So you'll find that unless it's a vegan restaurant or a more westernized restaurant, traditional Vietnamese restaurants don't serve pho after breakfast time. I mean, when I say a vegan restaurant, I mean, you know, just a restaurant catering to more than just locals. You typically find it at breakfast time in very traditional local restaurants, but you can find it. So I'm still dreaming about the one that there were actually quite a few that I really liked when we were over there. Cause I do this with Caesar salads. There are certain dishes and certain cuisines that become kind of your barometer for how good is this restaurant? Like how talented is this chef? Like I use Caesar salads for that. Of course, that's going to be usually in vegan restaurants. And that's kind of my go-to. Like if I can get a Caesar salad, I will. And I know my favorite Caesar salads and my least favorite Caesar salads. Well, pho has become that for me. So wherever I'm going now and at home, I'm trying pho and I'm kind of measuring it against some of my favorites in Vietnam. We did go to the oldest Vietnamese restaurant here in Oakland once we got home. And sadly, there were very few vegan dishes. Well, there were vegan dishes, but there were virtually no vegan soups and definitely not pho. There was one soup that was kind of bland and like you can add, you know, it's mostly just vegetable soup with a very thin vegetable broth. It was okay. But pho is different. And there is a Vietnamese restaurant that we have found and that we love. And so in a vegetarian vegan version of pho, you usually find that there's more vegetables than in the meat-based one. There's lots of broccoli and there's carrots and the meat is usually tofu. Or one of my favorite soups, pho, when we were in Vietnam was at our last hotel. It was served every day for breakfast. They used yuba. And I love yuba so much. So yuba, if you don't know what yuba is, Yuba is basically the skin that forms from soy milk. It forms on the top of soy milk when soy milk is heated. You know, when you were young and you made pudding, or at least when I was young and my mother made pudding for me, or we would make it from the package. And if you didn't cover the pudding, it would form a skin. And I loved it. I actually loved the skin. I always made sure we didn't cover it, so it formed a skin. So I tend to love that texture. And yuba is one of the best things in the world. And it goes back to like the 1500s in China and Japan. And it's just got this really wonderful chewy texture. So it's just bean curd skin is what it is. Now, I haven't had it since I've become zero waste, because my favorite manufacturer here in Oakland, Hodo, is packaged in plastic. And they are one of the sponsors of the Compassion in Action Conference, and we are picking up a bunch in bulk that they're donating for our special Friday night platinum event. But I am trying to perfect making it at home, and when I do, I will let you know about it. You can certainly make sure you're following me on Instagram and that kind of thing, because I'm going to be testing it. It's basically just simmering soy milk at a low temperature for about 25 minutes, and you form the skin. So it takes some practice and it takes some perfecting, but I am going to do it. And that way I'll be able to have my yuba, even though I don't think I'm going to ever have it in the volume that, of course, Hodo makes it in, until they start serving it in bulk. So pho, just a shout out to pho. Number two, spring rolls made from rice paper. Of course, this is something I've had a gazillion times, and you will find fresh and fried, stuffed with shredded fresh vegetables and always a dipping sauce. But the variety that I found in Vietnam was just a higher variety, or higher quality, greater variety. And there were just so many delicious versions of it. We also learned to make our own fresh spring rolls when we were on our own private boat in Halong Bay, as well as in our cooking class at a beautiful place called Red Bridge when we were in Hoi An. And it's harder than you think to roll it just right, especially with all of the vegetables inside, but we had opportunities to try it ourselves. And one of the best things we did, one of the most exciting things we did, was we learned how to make rice paper and rice noodles, as in the rice paper that you use for making spring rolls. We actually had several demonstrations in a couple cooking demos and classes we had, and I haven't tried it yet at home, but it's really easy. It was so much easier than I thought it would be, but there's a couple tools I need still, to be honest, to be able to make it at home. And yeah, it was pretty awesome. You can see videos and photos on at joyfulvegan.com to see some of us making rice paper and rice noodles. It was pretty awesome. Now, one of the things I was worried about was that when I got home, that I wasn't going to be able to have rice noodles. Of course, you know, like I said, I'm going to practice making it, but I haven't yet. And I wanted to get some rice noodles to be able to make pho and different Vietnamese dishes at home. And I was really bummed, because anytime I've ever seen pasta or noodles in bulk in stores near me, it's always Italian pastas. And I was just really bummed, because I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to get noodles that's not wrapped in plastic. So I went to the Food Mill, which is one of the stores near me that I recently rediscovered. I think I mentioned that in a previous episode. And someone asked me if I needed help, I was checking out, and I said, hey, by the way, do you know any place that might sell, you know, rice noodles in bulk? Do you know any place around here? And one of the clerks said, yeah, we have it right over there. I just put it out. And I was like, what? And they had two different versions. You know, basically it's like ramen. And they had two different versions. They sold them in little blocks. One is black, made from black rice. And one is, it was actually, what was it? It was like a millet brown rice, something like that. And yeah, so I can get rice noodles in bulk. Until I learned to make it myself, I could get rice noodles in bulk. How amazing is that? It's one of the gifts of the zero waste adventure, or any adventure where you start opening your eyes to something you don't realize it's there until you start looking. I have said this for decades. Now I can say that. I'm old enough now. I can say for decades, I've been saying that when you become vegan, you recognize things that you never saw before, not because they weren't there, but because you weren't looking. Your gaze wasn't calibrated over in that direction. So this is an example, and I've been experiencing it with zero waste, is you don't know what's available until you start looking. So it's pretty awesome. So rice paper, that was a really fun thing to learn how to make from scratch. Royal cuisine, I mentioned earlier, also called imperial cuisine, is one of the features of the central Vietnamese city of Hue, which was once the capital of the last dynasty of Vietnam, the Nguyen dynasty, in 1802 to 1945. A major attraction, aside from the historic citadel, because it's quite beautiful, and we did do a tour of that, but a major attraction of Hue is its culinary tradition, centered on highly decorative and colorful foods. Originally, this special food was created for, as you can imagine from the name, the royal family, the king and the royal family. And it was not traditionally vegetarian. So if you just go to Hue and say, oh, I want royal cuisine, it'll be vegetarian. Not per se, but you will be able to find it vegetarian for sure. And of course, we arranged to have a very special, two really special meals. One was a lunch place. I'll make sure that link is on my website at joyfulvegan.com. It was also just beautiful. I could not believe how they could carve. I mean, it was incredible. There was like a whole pineapple carved from carrots or something like that, if I remember correctly. And so that was our lunch. But then at dinner, we had arranged for a 12-course meal at a very special restaurant that treated us to an incredible 12-course meal. Just listen to this menu. I'm just going to read the menu. Let's see what I have here. Sweet and sour vegetarian salad, spring roll on the dragon boat. You can get a sense of the vegetable carvings going on. Grilled, what is that? Lot leaf with vegetarian beef, Hue fried pancake, which is a staple, vegetarian fresh noodle soup, grilled vegetarian paste skewer, deep fried mushroom with pineapple sauce, fried tofu with sweet and sour sauce and mushrooms, sweet and sour vegetarian chicken, steamed vegetables with sesame sauce, steamed rice with lotus seeds, and stuffed lotus seed with longan syrup. That was the dessert. So like a huge variety. And you can tell that there's a lot of vegan meats. Mentioned seitan a couple times, vegetarian chicken, because Hue was the center of Buddhism for centuries. So many restaurants are adept at making vegan meats. Many locals eat vegetarian at least 2 to 6 days per month to observe the special Buddhist lunar days. So if you do visit Hue, you will find plenty of restaurants serving authentic local vegan food. If you go with us, you get to dress up in royal attire. So if you see photos on my website of David and I as the king and queen, and everyone else is our vassals, then that's what that's all about. It was pretty fun. And yeah, the sculptures, there were sculptures of dragons and ducks and a peacock, all from like carrots and parsnips. It was absolutely beautiful. So that's the royal cuisine or imperial cuisine in Hue. Now, our motto on CPG Vegan Trips is that we spoil vegans. So our breakfasts are quite a feast. I'm thinking of our first hotel in Hanoi. Of course, there are many fruit options. There was delicious pho. We had pancakes, yogurt, coconut pudding with fresh fruit like mangosteen, mango and papaya and dragon fruit and pineapple and bananas. We had croissants because that's the way we roll. Let me tell you something. You won't be getting vegan croissants if you go on your own. Just going to say it. Because this is the kind of thing we arrange for our group. We had jicama salad, which was delicious. So you can tell there's a lot of sweet and savory dishes for breakfast. But one of the nice things about the breakfast on the CPG trips is that we have our own section. So our people aren't subjected to like bacon and eggs and sausages and all the things that are typical at breakfast buffets. We do the same for all our meals. I mean, we're obviously mingling with all of the locals and other people in the country. But when it comes to our meals, especially breakfast, where there's a lot of meat that smells pretty bad in the morning, it's not what you want. We make sure that everyone has, they have our own section. And it means also that we kind of have some pretty special sections because that's the way we roll. Breakfast on our private boat in Halong Bay was not separated from anyone because the whole boat was ours. And it was a little ridiculous because I think we had more than one breakfast. Some people were getting up in the morning to go for a hike up to an outlook that I couldn't go on because I tore my meniscus before the trip. But we arranged to have breakfast for those folks before they left. And then there was a full breakfast once they returned. in Hue at our gorgeous hotel. We had the most beautiful private spot that we twisted arms to get. And you can see the video at joyfulvegan.com. There were cereals, oatmeal, fruit, crepes, pancakes, pho, congee, rice, noodles. There were British breakfast items like roasted tomatoes and beans and hash browns. We had a tofu stir fry and fruit juices. So you will not go hungry, but you also just have a nice wide range of food to choose from. And in Hoi An, which I think was the most special spot, we had to keep telling other guests that their breakfast was upstairs inside while ours was on the big, beautiful open patio overlooking the river. But it was the best pho. That's one of the ones that I use now as kind of my barometer. And then we had pancakes, muffins, fresh fruit, fruit smoothies, like five different smoothies, yogurt, the most beautiful fresh breads. We had nut-based cheeses that we brought with us, fresh salad that had olives and tomatoes and peppers and green lettuce. So you can see everything at the website, but don't be hungry when you look because it's going to make you hungry. Now, vegetarian dishes in Vietnam often have the same names as their meat equivalents. But as I mentioned in the episode about traveling in Thailand, in restaurants with chai, the word chai, C-H-A-Y, which means vegetarian, when you see that on the sign in front, it means that the dishes that they serve at that restaurant are made with tofu or vegan meats instead of animal-based meat. So, for example, some of the restaurants we ate at were called Min Chai. There was Nahang Chai. There was Udom Chai. All of those restaurants were in Hanoi. And you might see notations like Pho Chai or Banh Mi Chai or Khom Chai. So either, Pho Chai, which is, vegetarian soup, vegetarian sandwich, vegetarian rice. Chai is the Vietnamese word that means non-meat or meatless, both as a noun and an adjective. Consuming chai food doesn't refer to vegan dishes necessarily, but it means refraining from the acts of killing animals for food or otherwise. Buddhists have long observed chai eating to adhere to the principles of nonviolence or ahimsa, and most Asian countries are familiar with this term and will understand when you say chai that you don't want meat, dairy, or fish in your dish. So it's just a tip for you. Chai. Min Chai, the vegan restaurant, there were definitely lots of vegan restaurants in Hanoi. The Min Chai had two locations in Hanoi, and their food was fantastic. That's where I had my first pho. That's where I learned how to say no cilantro. And on our first day, the place we ate where we had our welcome dinner, we had a feast. I really think we had 20 courses. And I'm not, like, it was ridiculous. It was like, we couldn't keep track of all the food. That's called Udom Chai. It was really beautiful, multi-level restaurant, has a vegetarian menu in general, but they prepared all the vegan dishes for us. And our CPG vegan welcome trips feasts are the epitome of abundance and joy and decadence because we want you to experience the way we will spoil you for the rest of the trip. We also went to a really lovely place in Hanoi called Koto, which is an organization that gives at-risk and underprivileged youth the opportunity to learn and thrive in their lives. The people who come through this program would never have had an opportunity like this if Koto didn't exist. It's a hospitality training center. It stands for No One Teach One. And Koto has trained over 700 students, probably now more, in their training center. So they go through the training center and then they become the servers in the restaurants. So that's what our lunch was on one of the days in Hanoi. And our menu there was, for instance, here's another menu idea of what you would find in vegetarian menus in Vietnam: banana flour salad with herbs and sweet. Let's see, it's a little bit of a translation issue. Banana flour salad with herbs and sweet and sour sauce. There was a fresh spring roll with fresh vermicelli and local herbs, braised tofu and mushrooms, green beans and soy sauce, baked eggplant with onion sauce, stir-fried seasonal vegetables with garlic, fragrant steamed rice, and fresh fruit and coconut milk. So it's pretty good. It's pretty delicious. And dinner at the restaurant called Nahang Chai, that was pretty new. It had opened only a few months before, and it was really absolutely beautiful. The entrance to this place is stunning. So again, it's called Nahang Chai. You'll see the name of all these places and the pictures at joyfulvegan.com. And they prepared an incredible feast for us. The dish that stands out the most, I wish I had the menu. I'm sure I took a picture of it, but I can't find it. I looked. But one of the things that stood out, besides the, they have these little clouds of tofu, which I'm still fantasizing. I'm still dreaming about them. But the hot pot is a Vietnamese staple, especially on chilly nights. And that was really fun because they cook it right in front of you. So there's this big, massive, pot that gets hot. And they just add the bok choy and the vegetables and the noodles and the broth. It's all cooked right in front of you. And it's really, really lovely. So definitely don't hesitate to get a hot pot when you're in Vietnam or when you're at a Vietnamese restaurant. Now, beverages. Water. People ask about water all the time when we go to countries that are still developing. Water systems are not safe to drink water from the tap in Vietnam. And we do make an effort to implement as many low-waste habits as possible, as I mentioned. We encourage everyone to bring their own refillable bottles so that we can keep them hydrated with huge containers of filtered water that we keep for everyone in our vans. That way, we can reduce the need for plastic disposable water bottles, which is an issue when you're traveling. It can be very difficult. However, the most important thing is that people stay hydrated. So no one's ever made to feel bad if they forget their refillable water bottle. We do bring a couple extras for people, but if you have to buy a plastic water bottle, we get it. We do the best we can. That's what we're all doing. But we do bring extras to help you. We will do this, of course, in Rwanda, where the water is not potable also. And there are other ways to enjoy safe water other than plastic disposable water bottles and other than the refilling station that we keep. And that's using water filtration tablets or a SteriPen. At Kodo, the nonprofit restaurant I mentioned, that's where I had my first water sterilized by a SteriPen. Bridie had brought along her little SteriPen and she gave me a demonstration. It uses UV rays to sterilize the bacteria in untreated water. And it's used by backpackers and wilderness trekkers the world over. So it is absolutely safe, but I had a little trepidation. I did. So we did it. It was, kind of tap water. We stirred it. I think you stir it for like 30 seconds. I don't know. There's 60 seconds. Don't listen to me. Follow the instructions on the SteriPen, but you stir it for a little bit. And I drank it up and I never got sick. So I was willing to test it and I did. And I'm sold. So that's water. Just be prepared. Soy milk. Of course, soy milk is very easy to find in Vietnam. When we were up in Hoi An, one of the activities we arranged was a bicycle ride through the countryside. And we had several activities along the way, one of which was arranging to stop at a private home that makes homemade, obviously, soy milk that they bring to the market every morning to sell to locals. As someone who makes soy milk from home religiously, it was a joy to watch it being made in much larger quantities. And of course, they used to do it all by hand, but they have a massive grinder now because it's loads easier than mashing it by hand. But it was really fun to see soy milk being made from scratch. And you won't have any trouble finding it in stores around you. It was interesting when we went to Rwanda our first time. Well, the only time we've been, but we will be going back. But when we were in Rwanda, soy milk was not a thing. Now, I've heard it's a little different now, and of course, we're going to make arrangements to make everything even 10 times more available than when we were just there, the four of us. But for our CPG trips, this is what we do. But it was really interesting because it's not dairy is a big, big beverage in many different parts of Africa, especially in Rwanda. But in Asia, of course, because their tradition was soy milk, it's very easy to find soy milk. Now, one thing you will see commonly used for desserts and drinks in cafes and in restaurants is condensed cow's milk. But because we wanted our people to enjoy the same thing, we brought condensed coconut milk with us. And so because of the arrangements we make with restaurants and hotels in advance, they had it out for people to use for special drinks, for desserts, or for like on crepes for breakfast. It's absolutely delicious. So just note that. Of course, the Thai iced tea, which a lot of people are familiar with, you would find that with condensed cow's milk. You can make it with condensed coconut milk. Now, of course, I bring tea with me wherever I travel. You've heard me talk about that ad nauseum. And so I did have some of my favorite Chinese teas with me. And of course, tea is a beverage commonly found throughout restaurants in Vietnam. And one of the things I love I love about traveling to Asia is the fact that there's always an electric hot water kettle. And actually, I find this in parts of Europe as well. You just do not find this in the United States, is because there, you know, especially in England or the UK, there's a tradition of tea drinking. And so you will always find electric hot water kettles, not just coffee makers, because there's nothing worse than drinking tea from water that tastes like coffee. It's disgusting. So I was always very happy that every room, and of course we would have made these arrangements anyway, but that of course it's easy to make tea wherever you are, easy to find, easy to order. In Hoi An, there is a beautiful tea house, a very special tea house that I highly recommend visiting, called Reaching Out Tea House. It's a silent tea house that's staffed by local hearing impaired community members. So if you're looking for a very special cup of tea, I highly recommend it. Beer is a common beverage in Vietnam, as with many other hot tropical countries. And there's something called Bia Hoi, which is available throughout Vietnam. It's basically homebrewed beer. And these Bia Hois tend to be found mostly in small bars and on street corners. And it's really fun. The beer is brewed daily, and then it's matured for a short period. And once ready, each bar gets a fresh batch delivered every day in these big steel barrels. It's very light. It's like less than 3% alcohol. It's definitely a lager. It's a light beer. And of course, it's pretty inexpensive. And so we went to a Bia Hoi, a place where they served Bia Hoi in Hanoi, and it was super fun. Now, don't lose your veganity. Related to food, there are a few things for vegans to note in particular. I don't want to make it sound like it's a breeze, just easy breezy to find delicious vegan food everywhere. I mean, of course you can, you won't starve. And I will emphasize that you will definitely never lose your veganity on a CPG trip. However, and that's really the advantage of going with a group to a country that's very unfamiliar to you, is that they do take care of everything for you. So I keep saying that because I do want to distinguish between the value of what you get when you go with a group where you don't have to think about anything versus doing it on your own. Some people like the challenge. You want to figure it out on your own. That's great. And if you do, then I'm here to tell you that there are things to be aware of. Number one, one of the things I think David was really bummed about, and it was such a shocker for him, was banh mi is hardly ever vegan, hardly ever vegetarian. Like, it's just hard to find. Banh mi is that wonderful Vietnamese sandwich. Now, David eats banh mi frequently because here in San Francisco, like banh mi, like a vegan banh mi is very easy to find. But, you know, we kind of realize now that that's, you know, kind of inauthentic, in the sense that banh mi in Vietnam is very much about meat and pate, and it's a street food. So I don't think David found it. He never found banh mi on the street, as a street, you know, because banh mi is a street food, but he did find vegan banh mi in, I think, one or two restaurants. But yeah, that was interesting. So just be aware that you, if you like banh mi at home, you might have a hard time finding it on the street in Vietnam. Now, here's an interesting thing we learned on our trip that I don't think we knew in advance. And why would I? Because I don't drink coffee. But apparently what is called Vietnamese coffee may mean, so you should ask, may mean that the coffee beans have been roasted in dairy-based butter. I know it's weird, but it's a thing. Apparently it started because Vietnamese coffee beans tend to be bitter, and the butter cuts the bitterness. And then it became a thing. So it's not that all coffee in Vietnam is roasted with dairy-based butter, but what is called Vietnamese coffee may be, as a rule, and you might want to check, you might want to ask first. And then, of course, finally, just as with any Asian cuisine whose dishes tend to be flavored with fish sauce, always ask first to have your dish made without. And I would do the same thing regarding eggs as well. Even sometimes a fried roll or fried tofu might use eggs. So just ask. So on our CPG trips, we've worked with the hotels. I've talked about restaurant activism on the podcast before. That's what we do as part of the CPG trips. Like I said, we make sure our group has its own space. And so we work with the hotels on all of these details, but we really work diligently with the chefs to give them what they need to create the special meals that characterize our trips. We help them identify what they have on their menus already that's vegan. We help them modify their own recipes to make them animal product free. We provide them with recipes, namely mine, that result in our amazing feasts. We work really closely this way, and we're quite literally doing restaurant activism, which is, I think, really important. I think it is one area that I would love to see more of in the world. And we're helping them stretch their comfort zones. We're helping them keep them on their menus after we leave. The Metropole in Hanoi was no exception. We did not ask them. I don't think it was in the plan to have the croissants. That came because they were starting to think creatively and more broadly based on what they learned from us. I remember in Bangkok in Thailand, the Anantara, there's an Anantara, well, it's a chain. So there was an Anantara in Hoi An, there's an Anantara in Bangkok. The Anantara in Bangkok was insane because honestly, I know I keep saying that about our breakfast buffets, but I think nothing could top this one. There was a pancake station, a sushi station, a salad station, a noodle soup station. There were 15 hot prepared foods. Plus, there were pastries, including brioche and croissants and donuts, which would normally be made with dairy products. And we went and double checked. We're like, what did you use? How did you make these? We didn't expect it. And they were like, no, we used vegan butter, and et cetera, et cetera. So we were really helping them stretch their thinking about quote unquote vegan food. The Anantara in Hoi An was also in Vietnam, went all out. They had delicious muffins, delicious pancakes. Everything was just really good. You know, that's the standard. Our standard is very high, but we also expect that standard to be met by the chefs that we work with. And it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot to do that, but it's absolutely worth it. So don't underestimate that opportunity to work with restaurants. Now, aside from having restaurants find special places for us and, you know, make sure that they're making fabulous food for us, etc., I want you to know that we're also very conscious of making sure our travelers know, and this is why I'm telling you, about animal-related attractions that you might innocently fall prey to. Now, of course, we vet every animal sanctuary we go to, and you can listen to the Thailand episode, which I talked about traveling, you know, what is it, avoiding animal cruelty while traveling in Thailand, because there are some things that you might not know, and you know, they call themselves a sanctuary, and you think it's legit, and before you know it, you're contributing to, you know, animal cruelty. I mean, it's really a thing. They trick tourists all the time. And so we make sure, of course, it's not even, you're never going to stumble upon it as part of our trip, but you know, people go out on their own and there's things to be aware of. And so I'm here to share with you that there are things to be aware of in Vietnam. Like I said, as far as any sanctuaries or conservation organizations we partner with for our trips, Vietnam, Thailand, France, Rwanda, all of them are legitimate and they are vetted by us. If there's anything that winds up happening, you know, something slipped through the cracks, but everything is vetted very carefully by us. But there's always something to be aware of in all of these countries. It's just the fact of life. It's in every country. No country is without animal cruelty. And I just want to make sure you know that when it comes to Vietnam, you should know that cat and dog meat is indeed served as quote unquote exotic meats. And it tends to be more common in the north, but, and they also tend not to be served this dog and cat meat, served in Western kind of more touristy restaurants. Dog and cat restaurants usually specialize in dog and cat meat, so it's unlikely you'll just see it on a regular restaurant menu. And a lot of animal parts are indeed sold and eaten in Vietnam. I'm telling you this because I want to make sure if you go on your own and not part of a CPG trip, you're careful to avoid that. And you're going to see live markets. You might stumble into a restaurant serving like live animals, snakes, turtles, of course, fish. And other than that, it's mostly in the countryside that you'll encounter animals like pigs mainly. They might be tied down or they're tied up, being raised for food. They might be tethered on a short leash and they might not look, obviously, be happy. Sometimes when trekking or staying in villages, you might see a chicken. being killed or a pig being killed as part of big celebrations. The way animals are transported can be very upsetting. You might see pigs tied up in the back of a truck or chickens held upside down. You'll definitely see water buffalo. We saw a lot of water buffalo, especially up north. They're part of the agriculture system still. Street dogs and cats may not always look healthy. In Thailand, street dogs tend to be taken care of by the community. I talked about soy dogs, and I think they're starting to extend some of their work into Vietnam, but that can be difficult to see. There are very few services to help animals, like domestic animals, which is a big part of the problem in Vietnam. So that's just something to be aware of. For what it's worth, we didn't really see many street dogs or street cats when we were in Vietnam. We saw really happy ones at Jack's Cat Cafe, which was one of the highlights of our trip. And I will tell you about that as soon as I thank supporters. All of you, thank you so much for supporting this podcast and my work and my blog, enabling me to share the tools and resources people need to cause as little harm as possible. Thank you to everyone who listens and subscribes and supports. If you're getting anything out of this work, I cannot emphasize enough, your support makes it possible. You can join all the other supporters, including our platinum supporters, of which we only have a few now, Tim Anderson, David Cabrera, Alexander Gray, Morgan Hall, Michal Stone. I'm really sad because a lot of you who think you're supporting my work, your credit card is declining and we keep writing to you, which also takes time and resources, and we don't hear back from you. So if you pledged your support through Patreon, I beg you to go to Patreon, go to your account and make sure your pledge is going through. I'm not going to name names, but just telling you that if you think you're supporting this work because you signed up once, it's not necessarily the case. It's a good idea. It's just good practice to just maybe check every month just to make sure, because that's when it gets charged. It gets charged monthly. And if you're not a supporter and you value this work, I cannot tell you. I mean, every second of my day is spent creating content either for my blog, either for my podcast or for my website or for social media. I just spent 3 hours today pitching Huffington Post and KQED and the New York Times on articles and TED. I mean, the amount of time it spends, I'm not complaining, but it takes so much time to just craft the wording to pitch a story, an article to these places. And most of the time I don't get them, but it's worth trying. If I don't try, then I'll never get like the gig I have at KQED, which is something I've been doing for 12 years now. And it was because I pitched a radio commentary and I got it. And now, like for 12 years, I just pitched to Mark and he just trusts my work. He rejects some of my work, which is always frustrating. But we have a relationship. I would love to do more of that. I would love to be a voice for animals in other mediums and publications, but it takes so much time. So when you support my work, I want you to know that every second of my day is spent finding ways to get the word out there. That's besides the books I'm writing and the conference that I'm putting on. You know, it just takes so much time to do this. And if you knew how much money I made from my books, you would really ask, why are you doing them? Because it's not where, that's just not where it's at. You are the primary supporter. Like, you are the primary supporter of my work. And if you're not supporting it, I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know. So I just want you to know that you're valued, that I value you. And if you value this work, I am giving it back. That's how it works. It's value for value. So that's my little pitch. Patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. Make sure you check to see if you're declining, because there are some people I've been naming who have been declining for a long time. And there are people I know who do value this work, but who are not supporting. So any amount helps. Now, we were so thrilled to find Jack's Cat Cafe in Hoi An to include as part of our CPG trip to Vietnam. Bridie went and checked it out in advance and was thrilled about what she found. Jack's Cat Cafe is an incredible project. It's part of Vietnam Cat Welfare, an organization founded by a couple. She's from the UK. He's Vietnamese, whose story is quite inspiring. I really encourage you to go to their website and read about their story. It really started with being inspired to do something about the cat meat trade because a cat they had adopted was kidnapped, and they are pretty certain he was killed and eaten. And so that's why they started this organization, and their whole cat cafe is vegan. It was vegetarian when we were first arriving. Of course, they made everything vegan for us, but they were just transitioning over to being 100% vegan after working with us. Maybe a coincidence, maybe not. And it's really wonderful. So we, like I said, all of the visits to the shelters, the sanctuaries, the conservation parks, all of it's part of the cost of a CPG trip. And it, and our visit to these places support the organizations we visit. So it's, you know, you're supporting the work of these organizations and the mission, like Jack's Cat Cafe. And so go to joyfulvegan.com, find the link to all of the places I'm going to talk about. But we hung out with the rescued kitties. I think there's like 70 cats there. It's gorgeous. You would never know 70 cats were there. And I would really encourage you to follow them on Instagram. It's fun to see them because we met some of the cats and because we know the location now. So it's fun to see them. I mean, the cats are lounging in the tires. They're lounging in the leaves. They're lounging in the palm trees. They're lounging in the, it's just adorable. So we heard from the founder and she told us their story and it's very inspiring. So go visit them if you can, whether you're with us or not, Jack's Cat Cafe. On the way to Hoi An, which is where Jack's Cat Cafe is, from Hue, we drove over the spectacularly stunning Hai An Pass, which you can go see. Just type in. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a gorgeous pass. We stopped a couple times for pictures. Dramatic, beautiful, green, mountainous pass. And then we began our descent back to sea level to stop over at Son Tra Peninsula to check out the wonderful work that local, a non-government association, an NGO called Green Viet is doing to save the red-shanked langur. They're called the red-shanked Duke langurs, and they're incredibly beautiful primates. They're stunningly beautiful. They don't even look real. They don't look real. And like so many wild animals, they're threatened by habitat loss, deforestation, development, environmentally unfriendly tourism, hunting. They're hunted for their flesh. They're hunted for their flesh for traditional medicine. They're also hunted for their international pet trade. And as a result, they're considered critically endangered. So in our research to create the best experience for our travelers and to support the work of NGOs helping animals in the countries we visit, we discovered the work of Green Viet, and an NGO that started with just a few dedicated people and which has grown into an incredibly effective organization. Their mission is to take action to help communities, local communities, understand, respect, and adopt an eco-friendly lifestyle by researching, conserving, and disseminating the values of biodiversity. It's pretty impressive the work they're doing. We met up with one of the founders and other conservation leaders with the organization to trek in this gorgeous national park to see if we could spot any langurs. It's exactly this kind of ecotourism that is supporting the lives and conservation of animals like the mountain gorillas of Rwanda, who we're seeing again in 2019. And that's what this is, because there's value. You know, again, I wish it was valuable enough to just support these animals just by virtue of their inherent value. It's just not the way it is in this world. It's just not the way it is. So us going there and visiting and trying to spot the animals, that's supporting the conservation of these animals because it shows the government and the locals that there actually is value, not by harming them, not by taking away their habitat, but actually there's money and there's value in keeping them alive. And so it was a tricky part of the day when we got there because they're usually less active in the hotter afternoon sun. But we were lucky enough to spot some families up in the trees. It was such a joy. It was such a privilege. And we're so grateful to the work for them, to them for the work they're doing. And it was an honor because there might be a time when the red-shanked Duke langurs cease to exist. So if you'd like to support their work, go to joyfulvegan.com and I have links to all these organizations, including Green Viet now. The final organization that we visited, Animal Sanctuary, which you've heard me talk about many times, I'm going to cry, which is incredibly effective, and focused on protecting the bearers who are bred and trapped and imprisoned and exploited for their bile, of course, is Animals Asia. These beautiful bears are either bred or they're taken from the wild. They're confined in cages no bigger than their bodies or in huge shipping containers that are divided into individual windowless compartments. You can see this at joyfulvegan.com. A catheter is inserted into their gallbladder without any anesthesia, and bile is drained from their bodies that's used in traditional Chinese medicine. And they could be there for 5, 10, 20, 30 years. Animals Asia is working to end this industry, and it's incredible what they've been able to do. Please follow their work. They're also working to end the dog meat trade in Vietnam and China. Now, Animals Asia started to end the legal bear bile industry in China and expanded to stop the illegal bear bile hunting and trapping in Vietnam. So that's where we were, obviously. The work they're doing is so difficult because both countries are communist. So they're dealing with, you know, very different government. And they almost lost their sanctuary in Vietnam because of some ugly political maneuvers. But they triumphed because they have built so much political capital in these places, in Vietnam in this particular case. But their work is, it's always tenuous. And their work is incredible. They are trying to shut down the black market trade in Vietnam, where I said it's illegal. They're working to end bear bile farming in China. They're building sanctuaries. They're changing laws. And they're changing cultural norms. They're working with locals and traditional practitioners, they're not doctors, practitioners, to stop using bear bile and to use synthetic bear bile. And they're really making so much headway. They're making so much progress. The work they're doing is to be applauded and more than that, to be supported. So it was such a dream. I've known about their work for 15 years, and it was such a dream to go there. It's managed, the Vietnam Sanctuary is managed by the incredible Tuan Bennickson and his dedicated staff. It's spread over more than 27 gorgeous acres. It's at the edge of a national park, and there's these gorgeous, like, semi-natural outdoor enclosures, and everything they do there is to stimulate the bear's natural behaviors. There are pools, there are trees, there are various structures that help with the rehabilitation of the bears and cubs. Because, of course, having been confiscated from wildlife traders and poachers, both adults and cubs are not only angry when they arrive, they're anxious. Many of them are sick. And they often suffer from ailments such as gallbladder damage. They have broken teeth from biting on bars. They have other body conditions ranging from emaciation to obesity, from being kept immobile and being fed a poor and inappropriate diet. They also suffer from PTSD and other psychological trauma. The good news is that living among the rescued bears and each other in a quiet, safe environment with good food, they're spoiled, they heal. And that's one of the beautiful things about sanctuaries, is that they give animals an opportunity to heal and forgive. They have surgical facilities that are equipped to give the rescued bears the best possible chance of recovery. And we were given the opportunity to see one of the bears in surgery. He's having a tooth extracted, a sore tooth extracted. So it was an absolute honor to go there and see this amazing sanctuary and the amazing work of this organization. Worth every year I had to wait and pennies I had to spend and mile I had to travel. And I hope you get to experience this too. I feel like we spent more time outside when we were in Vietnam than, say, Thailand, just as a random country to pick. And though, of course, we pick the coolest times of year to go to tropical countries such as these, and you should always make sure you do, because you will die. I would die in Vietnam in July. We were there in April, and by the time we got to the south, it was really hot. If you look at our attire when we were in the north, however, in Hanoi, you can see that we're wearing sweaters and jackets and long-sleeve shirts. The weather was absolutely perfect. It was sunny and warm, but it was not ridiculously humid. You can tell whenever I'm in humid weather because my hair betrays me. It's ridiculous. So I do feel like we spent more time outside in nature on this trip Though, as I said, it gets hotter as you go farther south. You know, we went from the north to the central part. And then I said the four of us went down to Ho Chi Minh City at the end part of after our CPG part of our trip. And the south is much hotter. But this gorgeous country lends itself to being outside. Certainly in Thailand, again, on our trip, people spend a lot of time in the pools at the various hotels we stayed at, including the one in Phuket, where everyone had their own lap pool. And we were outside at the elephant sanctuary. But I remember when we were at Soi Dog in outside of Phuket, I guess, we were dripping with sweat. Like, you don't even get reprieve when you go into the shade. And I know that's the case in Vietnam as well, in different parts of the country. We were just very lucky that, you know, we choose the time we go. But in the north, it's really lovely. But as you get farther south, it definitely gets hot. There's a reason I don't live in a humid climate. Clearly, it's not made for me, or I'm not made for it. So the night we spent on Ha Long Bay, which is a World Heritage Site with its towering limestone pillars, there's emerald waters, forest-topped little islands. It's incredible. And one of the highlights of that overnight stay was we took kayaks out to a stunning spot that's reachable only through a little cave. And the highlight was all these little macaque monkeys that were showing off. They were totally showing off for us on the sheer cliffs that surrounded us. It was heaven. So that was beautiful. I mentioned the Hai An Pass was beautiful. The hike we took to see the langur monkeys. What I didn't mention was the visit to the beach after our visit to see the langur monkeys. We ventured to our lunch spot, which was a beautiful restaurant right on the beach. And get this, it was a vegan restaurant that had just opened. I'm going to reveal a little bit of backstory. Seb, when he was creating the itinerary for Vietnam, and he, you know, lived in Vietnam for a long time, he knows Vietnam. And I know you're listening, Seb. I'm about to talk about you. And I know you love it, even though you get embarrassed when I talk about how awesome you are, because when we were, you know, kind of planning the whole itinerary, and one of the things he knew he wanted to do, because we're in, you know, there's a beach right near where we're staying in Hoi An, and he wanted to make sure that we went to the beach. And he was looking, so when they were scouting, they were looking for, he's like, I wish we could find a restaurant that would make vegan food for us, maybe right on the beach, something really special. So when they went to scout, they found a vegan restaurant, like right where they wanted to go, right where he wanted our whole group to go, on the beach that had just opened a couple months before it was completely vegan. Now, it had been run as a fish restaurant for many years, so it's called The Fisherman still. They kept the name. But it's a vegan restaurant owned by a lovely couple sitting right on the beach. So we had a wonderful buffet feast right on the beach. And then we headed to our home for the last three nights in Hoi An, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous riverside town. It means peaceful meeting place. And our hotel, another Anantara, it's called the Anantara Hoi An Resort, sits right on the river, smack in the edge of town, which is perfect because you can just come and go as you please. You can explore a part of the town of Hoi An. Now, that's a good segue into the cultural aspects. I talked about the nature and the animal sanctuaries, obviously, and the food. But in terms of the cultural aspects, Hoi An is a huge part of that because the town itself is considered a UNESCO World Heritage Site. I mentioned Ha Long Bay outside of Hanoi is a World Heritage Site. Well, the entire town of Hoi An is considered a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And you can see why the moment you enter. It's absolutely stunning. It sits right on the river. It boasts a mix of both Vietnamese and French colonial architecture. It features a famous covered Japanese bridge. It's called Japanese Bridge that dates from like the 16th century. The town itself was originally a trading port from the 15th to the 19th centuries. And you can just see the different influences, and it's just really incredible. It's also really known for its tailoring, and a number of our travelers, including me, had skirts. I didn't get all of this made, but they had skirts and trousers and dresses and blouses and suits made. So it's a really awesome experience. We went to a tailor that Brighty was quite familiar with, and they just take care of you. They measure you. They help you pick fabrics for the kind of clothing you're looking for. You go back for your fitting. They make changes. You go back for your fitting again. And all of this was done within like the 3 days that we're there. So if there's ever a time you're going to Hoi An, know in advance. You can take one of the dresses I had with me. It wasn't made there. I just had a dress with me that I loved the dress. And I had them make a version of that dress in black. So you could do that. You could take a skirt that you know you love and just say, could you replicate this? It's pretty cool. So in Hoi An also, that's where I mentioned we took the bike ride. Well, everybody else except me went on the bike ride. I have to say, I wasn't able to ride the bike because of my torn meniscus, but I was really glad not to ride the bike. I was in the air-conditioned van because it was quite hot that day, and everyone else was quite sweaty, and we were in the air-conditioned van, which was nice. But we traveled along rice paddies and small hamlets, and we stopped, as I mentioned, to see soy milk being made, and then we stopped by a bamboo artist studio, and then we reached our main destination, which is Tra Quay Vegetable Village, and it was just such a delight. This vegetable village supplies organic vegetables for the whole of Hoi An and nearby areas. And they don't use manure or chemical fertilizers. They use a kind of algae that's found in a lagoon. It's only found in that area, in that village. And that's what they use as fertilizer. And so the vegetables were just, it was so beautiful, like just so green and so lush. And the flavors were just so fantastic because they made us a lunch from everything on the farm. It was pretty awesome. We had a really delightful tour. Our tour guide was just lovely. It's a family who runs the farm. And our tour leader was just an absolute delight. And we donned some local farming clothes. We did some work ourselves. We watered greens. We picked and harvested. And then we surprised our people with a massage while they drank champagne. Because, you know, that's what you do. And then we learned to make rice paper pancakes, hands-on, and enjoyed a delicious lunch. As far as what else we did related to the cultural and historical aspects of Vietnam outside of nature and food and animal protection, this was another reason I was really excited about going to Vietnam. Aesthetically speaking, I'm more drawn to Vietnam. You're not going to believe this, than I am to the architecture of Thailand. And it's just because the Buddhism that informs Vietnam is Chinese. It's very influenced by Chinese Buddhism, whereas Thai Buddhism is more influenced by Indian Buddhism. And I just happen to be more drawn to the Chinese aesthetic, which also influences Japanese Buddhism. There's just a little too much gold for me in the Indian/Thai Buddhism. So I just found the temples really lovely, just more subdued in terms of the aesthetics than the Thai. I love Thailand's beautiful. I do, but I just, it's hard to not compare the two because they're, you know, such prominent, popular Southeast Asian countries. One of the really special things we did as part of our tour was visit where Ho Chi Minh's body is displayed and where he used to live and work. He did not want any pomp and circumstance surrounding his death, which was quite true to his nature. He wanted his body cremated, but alas, it was preserved after his passing in 1969, and it's on display for public viewing. Now, it sounds macabre, but it was quite moving to witness veterans of what Americans call the Vietnam War and what the Vietnamese call the American War attend and pay homage, and to see hundreds of school children visit the site. It was pretty incredible. It was really moving. And so we viewed his body. We had our own guide to show us around the square where Ho Chi Minh, known as Uncle Ho to his people, first declared independence from the French in 1954, which of course was the beginning of the United States involvement in Vietnam. And from there, we visited the Temple of Literature, which is the first university in Vietnam. Are you ready for this? Of course, women weren't allowed at the time. It was built in 1076. Being an English history enthusiast, like literally England history, it's amazing to think of two completely different cultures, like what they were doing at the same time. So like England was reeling from the invasion of Norman the Conqueror. Of the Norman Conqueror William. Norman. I'm going to change the name to Norman the Conqueror. William the Conqueror, the Norman Conqueror. At the same time, Vietnam was building their first university. So it was pretty incredible. We also arranged to have some musicians play music for us. We also visited Hà Lộ Prison, which was used by the French to keep and torture Vietnamese political prisoners, and then used by the Vietnamese to keep American POWs. Of course, it was nicknamed the Hanoi Hilton by American POWs. And famously, it's where American Senator John McCain was kept as prisoner of war for more than 5 years when he was held. It's one of the places he was held, but he was there for quite a long time. If you're interested in seeing more about the Vietnam War on a visit there, even though it wasn't part of the CPG vegan trip, one of the most memorable visits we had was the War Remnants Museum down in Ho Chi Minh City, down in Saigon. So I definitely recommend that if you're interested in the Vietnam War. In Hanoi, we also visited the Women's Museum, which was pretty awesome. So many aspects of Vietnamese culture are patriarchal, but many are matriarchal and celebrate the strength and the softness and the beauty and the indispensability, of course, of women. My gimpy little self on my crutches had nothing on the amazing, strong women who help build, protect, and run this country. I think for me, one of the most surprising things when I was doing and just learning more about the Vietnam War was how large a role women played in the war itself. So it was pretty awesome. There's an entire museum dedicated to women. Now, I will say, speaking of the culture, one aspect that is unlike anything I've ever seen is the chaos of the streets. You may have heard of this, especially in Hanoi. So I mentioned I tore my meniscus in my knee before I left for Vietnam. So I actually traveled to the country on crutches. I had a cortisone shot before I left, so some of the inflammation had been reduced. So I was able to walk around a bit in Vietnam gingerly and without my crutches as time went on. And miraculously, I survived crossing the streets, because I'm just, you know, like, you'd think that I would just be dead, because you just blink and you could, yeah. It's really amazing. It's an adventure to just cross the street. Motorbikes, cars, buses, bicycles, cyclos, everything is zooming all around you in a frenzied whirlwind. And there's no such thing as crosswalks. You just walk and you trust that everything swerving around you will just stop so you can walk. It works. I live to tell my tale, but it's pretty incredible. On our way to dinner, our first night, we arranged to have each of our travelers enjoy a 45-minute cyclo tour of Hanoi. Cyclos are, they actually came about during the French, when the French occupied and colonized there. And, they're little bicycles. Basically, someone's riding a bicycle and then you're in a little cab in the front. And so these are cyclos. And so we had our travelers each enjoy a cyclo ride as we stopped along the way, handing them champagne and vegan cheese and crackers while they were cycled through the frenetic streets of Hanoi. And there is no way to describe what appears to be mayhem on the crowded streets of Hanoi. It feels like a suicide mission at first, but then you surrender and you just trust. And I found it, especially since I had no control because I was sitting in the cab, I can't do anything. You just trust. And I found it to be like a chaotic but beautiful dance. And I'm someone who gets really stressed in situations where there's a lot of stimuli, like loud noises and honking horns and crowds of people. But there was something about Hanoi's energy that didn't bother me. I actually really enjoyed it. Another surprise, another thing I did not expect. Another gift you get from travel. I don't react the same way to traffic when I'm here at home, but you just, transcend it when you're in a different place. And this was an incredible trip, an incredible place. I can't wait to go back. I am so grateful for everyone who traveled with us. It was a very special group of people, and I hope you can join us on a CPG vegan trip one of these days. Check out the Vietnam itinerary. I'm not exaggerating. I want to go back. And if I'm not with you on the curated trip, it just means you get to enjoy maybe another CPG trip when I am going on it. So check it out. I hope this was a helpful overview for you, whether you come with us or not. Until next time, for the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.